Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harris. With me, as always, is my co-host RJ Sines.
Hey,
we're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and if skinny Drew Carey could ever be as funny as fat Drew Carey.
Absolutely not.
My hope is that he'll get to his target comedy weight someday.
Only if he eats Arby's for the rest of his life.
That's a good life. Today we're talking about Seinfeld. Not Jerry Seinfeld, but specifically the show Seinfeld. Ran from 1989 to 1998 on NBC. That is our topic for today. But first, RJ is going to take us through what's going on in the world of comedy.
Yeah, so right now on Netflix, you can watch one of my favorite comedians, John Mulaney. Ben, have you heard of John Mulaney?
I have.
And you know why you heard of John Mulaney?
Because you showed me
because
him.
Because I made you sit down on your couch and watch John Mulaney's stand-up special, The Comeback Kid.
Yeah.
It's a great special.
I don't regret it.
John Mulaney is not a household name, and I'll tell you why. Because he was a writer on SNL.
Yeah, he was a writer on a lot of things, right?
He's written a lot of things, but most recently he was writing from 2009-2012 on SNL. So if you liked watching Saturday Night Live...
2009-2012, that's like Andy Samberg.
Andy Samberg, Bill Hader, yeah, Fred Armisen,
classic cast.
He wrote for all those people.
Excellent.
So if you thought, man, that was a good character, probably John Mulaney wrote that exact line.
Brilliant.
He's so funny, and he just has some of the quippiest little remarks. He's got some of the best stories. And honestly, if you like skinny white dudes like I do, you will love John Mulaney.
You're into this guy.
Yeah, so it came out last November, but the reason that's in the news today is because he was actually nominated for an Emmy, which happened last night, so that's also going on.
Excellent.
I was going to talk about what's going on in the box office, but maybe next week we'll talk about Bridget Jones's Baby. It's not a lot of other good comedies going on right now.
That's the sad excuse for a comedy.
Maybe we'll see Bridget Jones's Baby. I don't even know.
The
squeakle. The plural of Joneses is Jones or Joneses?
It's Jones-I.
Jonesies.
Joni.
Janes.
Yonesy.
Johns. Emmys last night, just a quick recap. Best comedy, Veep. Veep is a great, great show. It's been going on for quite some time now, like 7 successful seasons. Another great actor who won, Louis Anderson from the show Baskets.
Yeah. This show is like very particular, right? It's like pretty dry.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis plays the driest role possible. It's like a rodeo clown who went to college in France. And Louis Anderson plays his mom, and she's just like this overprotective, like, oh, I just went to Costco. I got strawberry kiwi, mango, lemon lime. Oh, strawberry Fanta razzmatazz. Oh, I haven't tried that. Just super funny.
But it's Louis Anderson from the 90s. His, like, voice is still in it, you know?
He's just wearing a wig and a dress.
So good.
Kate McKinnon won supporting actress from SNL this season.
Wait, that doesn't make sense to me. She was supporting actress because of SNL?
Yes. So technically, her being on SNL makes her a supporting actress.
Okay.
She wasn't a lead actress.
Got it.
Even though she's carrying the show on her back, she's doing
she is really funny.
She's super funny, amazing impressions. Jeffrey Tambor won for Transparent for Best Actor, and the big winner of the night was Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep for Vice President Selina Meyer. She has won so many Emmys.
This show is like, it's sweeping the Emmys.
It's destroying the Emmys.
That's so good.
And she won for the 5th time in a row.
That's so good it's breaking the Seinfeld curse.
Absolutely. The Seinfeld curse has been broken because of her. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is successful because she broke
yeah,
the curse.
Totally. No, that makes sense.
And last night she didn't break the curse. She broke it long ago. She was doing really well on New Adventures of Old Christine.
Right, because I was going to say, she was on that,
yeah,
which had success or mild success?
Pretty big success.
Oh,
she
okay.
won 2 Emmys for New Adventures of Old Christine and won, I think, 7 more on Veep.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's the most successful Emmy nominated and winning actress of all time. Killing the game.
That's amazing.
So that's even better because this week we are talking about Seinfeld.
Right.
And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is one of the main players in this amazing show.
One of the four on Seinfeld.
Do you like Seinfeld, Ben?
Oh my gosh. Ugh. Can we all just commiserate over the podcast together? Seinfeld is just that show that there's a guy, you're at a party, right?
Yes.
And there's a guy over there across the room and he just says, but I don't want to be a pirate. And immediately you go, okay, I'm a little bit more comfortable at this party because if I forget all of my topic conversation points that I'm thinking in my head, I can go over to that guy over there and just go, so Seinfeld, and then be completely comfortable.
Exactly.
That's what it is. That's what it is to me.
If someone's wearing a shirt that says, these pretzels are making me thirsty.
Immediately. You're
my friend.
Oh, it's so true. It's so good. But if you're one of the rare people who have just like never even heard of Seinfeld, first of all, pat yourself on the back because that's a feat because it is everywhere, right? Let me give you a brief history of what Seinfeld is. It's commonly referred to as the show about nothing, right? We'll get into a little bit more what that means. The show Seinfeld ran for 9 successful seasons, just completely destroying the Nielsen ratings for the majority of the series.
And for our listeners who don't know what the Nielsen ratings are, a quick breakdown of this, because for years I had no idea how anyone ever knew if TV was good. Like, how do you know? People just watch it. I know my neighbor kind of watches it, but I didn't think so.
You thought the Nielsen ratings was some guy named Nielsen, and he had a strong opinion.
Yeah, he was the Rotten Tomatoes before Rotten Tomatoes.
That's very true.
But that's just not the case. Essentially, they figured out a way to tap into what channels were on at what time in people's television sets.
Right.
So since the dawn of time, not true.
not historically accurate.
Since a certain fixed point in television history, they've been able to figure out, oh, so many people are watching Seinfeld. So many people are watching Frasier. Nobody is watching Mike and Molly.
Oh, no.
Boy, oh, boy.
But then how does that... Is it still translate today? Is it still a thing?
There's been some slight modifications, and now Nielsen ratings. Well, DVR and a little bit more digital things. So DVR, if it's set on TiVo, they go, oh, so-and-so recorded this. And they can even target specific demographics because they have different censuses and other information to know who's living in what area, what kind of people live in certain houses or apartment complexes.
Excellent.
It's ridiculous. And they even have down to a science multifamily houses. I mean, multiple people living in the same house, watching different TV shows. They can still cater to a specific audience. And that's what helps them with marketing and TV shows. And this is why the executives are like, oh, Nielsen ratings are way down. We're going to kick you off the air. It's like, anyways, that was a bit of a rant. But
TV
now
executives always know what they're talking about.
Exactly.
All that to say, Nielsen rating system, kind of like the Billboard Top 40.
Yeah.
And Seinfeld was riding that wave for the majority of the series.
Oh, absolutely.
Seinfeld has impacted everything in the world of comedy, television, even life itself. Like just phrases, yada, yada, yada. Not that there's anything wrong with that. No's good for you.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I think the double dipping a chip.
Right. Like, the idea that you can take a chip,
dip it,
take a bite. And then because you've taken a bite out of that, if you go back in for another dip, it's like putting your whole mouth right in the dip.
And now there's a phrase for that. Because I'm sure for years people frowned upon it.
Right.
But they'd be like, sir, you're not allowed to dunk twice.
Yeah, they didn't
and
have
then
the
Jerry
right
Seinfeld
word.
Was like, oh, it's double dipping. That's what it's called. That was a terrible Jerry Seinfeld impression, but...
In my head, I was wondering, like, how long into the podcast is it going to be until RJ does his Jerry?
I'll do at least 3 more Jerry Seinfeld
impressions.
So
good. No, it's so good. RJ is more the impression guy, guys. I can't do it. but yeah, Seinfeld is everywhere. Even 30 years later, today, it's still one of the most popular things ever.
And definitely one of the best TV sitcoms of all time.
Yeah. It's one of my personal favorites, for sure. So here is why we think Seinfeld is funny. We think it's funny because it has well-written, cohesive stories with themes that are totally relatable. It has a cast of incredibly dynamic yet relatable characters. And it has a masterful blend of fiction and reality.
I just love that sentence. Isn't that when good? You said it. Can you say it one more time good? For me?
It is a masterful blend of fiction and reality.
Wow.
So let's break
we
it down.
We just end the podcast right here.
Good night, everyone. Good night. You might be listening to this in the day. Then good morning.
Stupid.
So let's break it down. It was one of the best written shows.
Absolutely.
Right? Of its time, of all time.
Larry David was a genius before yes. his time. Him and Jerry worked together on this, and they made a masterpiece. One of the best things about the writing is Larry David's writing room mantra, which was no hugs, no learning.
Right. Larry David being one of the executive producers along with Jerry Seinfeld.
Right, right.
And co-creator with Jerry Seinfeld,
yes.
as well as... writer.
Yes.
And I don't...
He did a guest appearance.
No. He has some
but the back of his
appearances.
Head.
There, I think there is actually one... The last episode, they buy a candy bar from a store, and he pops his head out. It's like the only time you actually see his face. But he's the voice of George Steinbrenner.
Right.
And something else, too. He's
candy bar guy.
Oh, so good. But so that's who Larry David is. But yeah... that the no hugs, no learning is so key to the show because these characters, which we'll talk more about, that you fall in love with, technically, like if you look at the show, you know, over the whole span and say, you know, the Jerry in season one versus the Jerry in season nine, it's the same person.
Right. They haven't changed.
Yeah, yeah. 9 years have gone by in literal time, but they have not grown whatsoever.
Which is unique because character development is such an important factor in things like movies or drama series. But in these sitcoms, we want our people to stay the same.
Right.
We don't want them to, especially this show taught America, we don't want George Costanza to change one bit. We want him to goodness. Keep going for that eclair in the trash can.
Oh, it's too good. But even more, this was really... culture shifting and just like it
right,
had such
right.
a big impact because of television before this, right?
Right. right.
So think about, you know, your situation comedies before that, which really this is kind of the first situation comedy. Everything else was just like, you know, kind of the more classic family style.
Well, what's interesting is you had like true situation comedy, but this is textbook, like
right.
like mom and dad, like son and daughter, like the family unit.
The Honeymooners.
Right.
Beverly Hillbillies. Yeah, yeah. So those classic TV shows, they always had this element of, you know, you're having a lot of laughs along the way, but the, you know, think about I Love Lucy. You go back and the moral of the story is, you know what, Lucy, I love you, baby. I did a terrible Ricky Ricardo.
And that
like
was
New Yorkish.
The best. Hey, Lucy, baby darling. Yeah.
But so at the end of the show in those old TV shows, you've gone from, you know, non-growth to growth and you've learned a lesson.
Yeah.
Larry David said, out with that.
Out with that. This is how we're going to do things. We're going to have bad people who try to do something for themselves, make a mistake, and get hit over the head with that mistake
right.
for the rest of the episode, damaging everyone else around them.
Right. And it's there's definite like cohesion throughout the show, but you know, once they've made that mistake and the episode is over, it kind of just like falls apart, right?
Absolutely.
It's just done. You're done with that.
And that's one of the interesting things, talking about the history of television, this was a really, really new ground for all of sitcoms. We look now at these sitcoms like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, 30 Rock, The Office. They've all drawn something from Seinfeld. And that is a lot of the style of writing, the way the jokes are executed, the way the plot's executed. Like, these were... The kind of shows that came before was like, oh, the family unit in the workplace, the
right.
family unit at the bar, Cheers. People love Cheers. But Seinfeld said, okay, yeah, it's like a family unit, but we're a dysfunctional family
Definitely.
Unit.
Definitely, yeah.
And it's not even, they don't, at the end of the day, you don't see them like, I'm here for you, man. Give me a hug. It's like,
right.
Get the heck out of my apartment. What are you doing?
Oh, you're so right. Yeah, it's really just iconic. It's unlike anything. I feel like it really falls into the category of postmodern.
Absolutely.
Because, like, you know, like the Honeymooners and I Love Lucy, like, they were speaking to their audience and they were, you know, like, true. Like that's what was going on at that time. Absolutely. You know, you think about the 50s. But then Seinfeld really grabbed onto what was going on today and just like held up a mirror and was just like everyone could watch that show and just be like, oh, that's me. Yeah, I'm totally George. Relate.
Oh. Am I George Costanza? Like, and that's the crazy thing. Like, we talk about a show about nothing. Everyone knows that they actually gave themselves that right, yeah. tagline, mm-hmm. a show about nothing, because it's not really a thing that they do. It's not like a plot they follow from beginning to end, season to end of series. And the way I look at this is it's not just a show about nothing. It's a show about nothing else like it.
Right.
There was no one talking about this stuff up until they did. No one else is coming out and being like, hey, you guys ever make weird bets with your friends, like, about really inappropriate things?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was definitely for sure, like, you know, they broke a boundary on going past boundaries and being inappropriate. Like, yeah, they just kind of...
Well, they had important dialogues about sexuality yeah. and race and friendship and where do you cross the line between, like, mother-parent relationships, like, all these interesting family dynamics. For crying out loud, the list of romantic relationships that they have, like, it's just, like, on the nose, like, ah, we can't get this right. Like, right. it's so, it's that, like you're saying, that mirror.
When you really think about those characters, really, they're more anti-heroes than heroes,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, Lucy... You root for her because
every time
because she's just trying to do her job and the chocolate's just
she
going
just
too fast.
Eat all those chocolates. I went the same place in my mind. I just picture her. She's got to eat those chocolates, and we need her to eat those chocolates.
Yeah, and
she's
shove
them
all
trying
over
to do
her
apron.
Job. Like you just root for her, but when you really break down like Jerry, Elaine, George, Kramer, what they're doing isn't necessarily like. Something to be rooted for. It's something you relate to, like having to break up with a girlfriend and then you left books at their house, right? it's not a situation where you're like, oh man, like I really got to see Jerry make it through this one.
You're like,
you're going,
oh,
I'm
no.
in that same situation.
We've all been there and regretted it a lot. It's not necessarily specifically these situations apply to. Sometimes they do, and that's funny, but mostly it's the theme of it that. Oh,
sure, yeah.
That regret, that shame, I have to go back and do that thing now. Or someone has made a fool of me and I'm going to make sure they hear about it. And then I hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
All these little things, these subtle nuances tap into our human existence in a way that nothing else has.
Even some of the, like there's an episode, The Race is what it's called, where Jerry... is gonna race his old high school friend because he wants to prove that he's faster. And like what he's doing, like typically, you know, like a race movie, mm-hmm. you root for the person to win because they've worked so hard. You know, everything that the cast was coming at, you know, tackling these issues was all from a selfish perspective.
Absolutely.
He had his girlfriend. She thought he was the fastest, and that's how he wanted it to stay. And so I think he cheats. No. We'll go into this more. But the story is woven together so perfectly. Kramer's car backfires. That's what makes him think that the gun went off and he goes first, which is exactly what happened in high school. Just brilliant. So you're rooting for him, even though... it's totally selfish.
And that even goes into what we're talking about with the fact that there's such dynamic and relatable characters,
yeah.
right?
Totally. Yeah. The fact that it is so well written is because they spend a lot of time on these characters.
Absolutely.
Even though they're petty, mm-hmm. they don't have a lot of depth. You know,
no,
it's
no, no.
shallow characters.
But it's easy to figure them out.
But they're dynamic.
Yes.
They have so many little nuances to them, and I feel like they kind of represent a lot of different, you know, feelings that we feel a lot of times.
Right.
Situations that we're in a lot of times. But, yeah, I mean...
Well, and what's interesting is I think about the characters, and a lot of the time, most of the plot is driven because they are able to voice their uncomfortability to the other characters.
Right.
Right. So for you and I might not be able to tell you that you wearing the same exact shirt as me makes me uncomfortable, but in the Seinfeld universe, you better believe I'm going to tell my friends at home that, yeah, and then Ben was wearing the same exact shirt as me. We went to the same party. I don't understand. He's been wearing the same shirt ever since. Like,
are you uncomfortable that we're wearing the same shirt? Because no. We're not wearing shirts.
Oh.
I didn't know if that was like a thing.
They're deep V's.
It's just very deep V's.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the characters are just super iconic and classic. Off the top of your head, favorite character?
Cosmo Kramer.
Oh, I knew you were going to go there.
There is no other character in the history of television who can come into a room and instantly change the energy on a whim. The entire audience by like season 6 had caught on. The laugh track was going, "Oh yeah!" Like, cuz they knew that here comes the freight train.
Yeah.
And he's bringing in the physical comedy. I watched I think like a 6-minute video on all the entrances Kramer makes into Jerry's apartment. Sliding in, skidding.
Those 6 minutes you'll never get back.
Yeah. Oh, no. I will watch it again, gladly. Mid-podcast, I'll watch it right now and do the play-by-play.
Please stop pulling it up.
Okay, I won't. Okay. But seriously.
No, that's actually true. The cast had to ask the studio audiences to stop applauding so loud because Kramer, by that time, was such a favorite character that he would come in and it would take the cast out of the scene. Because the audience would just go on like a 2-minute clap rate. Like,
and they just keep going. They just did the spectrum of good comedy with these four characters. On one side of the spectrum, you have the introverted, like very well dialogued George Costanza. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, you have Cosmo Kramer, who has good lines. I mean, everyone's got amazing lines. But this guy was all like bones and just a dancey skeleton with a little fluffy hair on top, like, and his face moved like putty and his eyes got as big as a ceramic cat. Like, he was so good at physical comedy, and the way the camera could capture him just sent joy to millions of Americans.
I know, yeah.
Every week.
And the crazy thing is Michael Richards, who plays Cosmo Kramer,
yes,
he, out of the four main cast members, he was probably the most serious on set and really took his dialogue, his scenes like super seriously to the point of it would be hard to tell if he's actually having fun or not.
That's
you know, Jason Alexander, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Jerry, they're laughing, you know, they're like, "Oh, Jerry, you messed that one up," or, "Oh my gosh." But Kramer, or I'm sorry, Michael Richards was dead serious.
Really?
Like, especially when it came to physical bits, physical comedies, mm-hmm. You know, that he has to fall over a couch, like, which is so crazy because you think, like, you're making a complete, like, you know, wiener of yourself falling over this couch. And then he would get up and be like, you know, go straight to Jerry or Larry and just be like, "So how was that? Was that good? Did you like that?"
Yeah.
And you're just like, loosen up, dude. You're Cosmo Kramer.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of funny too, because of all the people who would like smile during the show or like kind of hint at like, "This is a funny moment."
Jerry.
Boing. Michael Richards never would reveal to the crowd that, "Look at how funny I am." And that was
never
the interesting thing about this show with the dynamic characters. And we'll talk a little bit more about how they just crafted this universe. But they would just always push a little bit on the fourth wall, especially with Jerry kind of like trying to hide his smile all
right.
the time. I'm smiling smugly as Jerry would. "I'm trying not to smile over here. Is it coffee cake or is it cake or is it coffee?" That's stupid. I don't want to get into this.
Oh, that's so good. But the last thing of why we think it's just so funny, their masterful way of blending fiction versus reality. So
this
goes to, you know, those moments where you can just totally relate, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you got to go get books from an ex-girlfriend's apartment. But at the same time, truthfully, you'd never actually find yourself in that exact situation.
Right,
they
right.
heightened it a bunch where, you know, George now likes this girl. So he's going to go over to the apartment and he's going to try and get the books or, you know, try and like navigate those waters. You relate, but at the same time, they're going through something kind of different.
Well, and yeah, we kind of touched on this, but even more so, like they established themselves as a fictional comedy.
Right.
There's a lot of ridiculous, over-the-top scenarios that happened. But at the same time, they grounded themselves in New York City.
Yeah.
They grounded themselves in an actual, real place with real events, real problems of America. Mm-hmm. And even funnier than that, like
the mayor was in it.
I think the first couple seasons or three seasons, they had Jerry Seinfeld do stand up before the episode started, which I never understood because most of the time it didn't even mix with the episode. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you trying to do? Sometimes the jokes weren't even funny. It was kind of weird, but that was the thing. Jerry Seinfeld was Jerry Seinfeld in the show.
Right.
And he was a stand-up comedian.
Right.
So that's true in fiction and reality.
Right.
That was the perfect example. I couldn't think of anything else. This is the perfect example of how they blended the show.
Right.
They took fiction and put it in reality.
Well, they have multiple times of that metafiction where it's real life, but it's also pointing out the fact that you're watching a show. Like, for instance, the storyline of the fact that George and Jerry, who Jerry is playing himself, his character is based on Larry David.
Yes.
Him and Jerry co-created Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And in the show Seinfeld that they co-created, those two characters are co-creating a show called Jerry, right? So you're watching this realizing they're doing a bit on themselves.
Right.
In the thing that they're doing.
Right.
Is total.
It's so meta and so before its time. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. That is as close to breaking the fourth wall as you can get. They're like Demogorgon Stranger Things pushing their face through the wall of the fourth wall. Going like, hey, don't you get it? We are being so forthcoming about our own mistakes and about the reality that we had. We're making it fictional. And that's the thing. Mix that with the times Jerry couldn't hold back a smile because the lines were so funny. I'm like, they know that we know.
Right.
They know that I'm laughing at this. They know they got me on here. And that's what kills me every time. And that's I really do like that storyline that you're talking about because that runs on for a couple episodes, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah. Like at the beginning of the fourth season, it kind of goes through the beginning of that season. Yeah.
Yeah. And they go through the whole thing with the NBC, the executives that aren't from NBC or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like turning it down, which is so true because at first, actual reality, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld pitch the show to NBC executives. They watch a pilot together and the executives go, to New York, to Jewish.
Yeah.
You got to dumb it down a lot. And they're like, okay. And then it got amazing hits and they renewed the whole season. And that's how they got their legs. And then
even
before that, they
pitched the show to Fox.
Oh.
And Fox said, we don't want it.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. So they made a pilot. NBC said, I don't know about this. Then they said, we'll go to Fox. They gave it to Fox. Fox said, we don't want it. They went back to NBC and NBC said, we'll run the pilot episode. So they run one episode. It immediately catches on. People are going, this is great.
Like, yeah.
These people are talking straight to me. It took a while for the NBC execs to kind of follow that trend. And then the next year in 1990, they had the rest of season one, which season one is only five episodes.
Right.
So it's a little tricky, but then later on in that year, they went ahead with season two.
Well, and what's incredible is we were talking about the Nielsen ratings earlier and the viewership of the show. It climbed exponentially. They were at the top of their game for like six of those seasons. Like they were in the top 10 of the Nielsen ratings.
Yeah.
And at one point they were, no, at two different points, they were the most viewed show on television.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we really think, and we carefully constructed this word, a masterful blend mm-hmm. of fiction and reality.
Yeah.
Because like that word blend is so key because truly the writing was to a level where So, okay, Kramer is, you know, he's struggling with his own, you know, piece of antagonism.
Right.
So is George, so is Jerry, and so is Elaine. Mm-hmm. Somehow, they all get interwoven,
oh,
right?
Oh, my gosh,
so
yes.
George drops his keys in a pothole they got filled. He goes to Jerry, asks him for advice. Jerry says, you got to dig him out. So he goes and he talks to some of Kramer's friends who have a jackhammer. Meanwhile, Elaine is wanting to get Hop Sings. So she has to propose that her apartment is across the street because that's the limit of Hop Sings. So now she becomes a janitor. Meanwhile, Kramer has adopted a highway. And it all comes together where Elaine can get Kramer some paint thinner because she's now a janitor. And oh, it's so brilliant. And Kramer spills the paint thinner and then Newman runs it over and he catches on fire. It's just so brilliant.
And the way they
the weave
yes.
is so good.
Someone makes a mistake and it ends up ruining somebody else's life. And that's when the weird thing is, because you're like, this is so kooky. There's no way this would ever happen. But you
or no way that
apart.
You would ever think, I'm going to root for this guy.
Right.
You're like, this guy's a jerk.
What's going to go on? And they all just end up messing each other's lives up.
But you love them because of the characters and the way they're written, right?
Absolutely.
So good.
Oh my gosh. And this is another part of this fiction reality dichotomy we're talking about. Art Vandelay. What's the other one? The three alter egos.
I never Vandelay. Remember George's. Art Vandelay, he's...
Sal Varnskin?
Yeah, that's Terry. And then J.G. Pennypacker.
J.G. Pennypacker. Yes, I'm so glad. I remember looking them up earlier today. I was like, oh my gosh, those are such bizarre names.
Right.
But they have these alter egos that they'll use as like fake names if they call somewhere and they don't want to be known by their names. And it all comes to a close when they are stuck in traffic on Puerto Rican Flag Day. And they are trying to watch the game, the Mets game, right?
Right, yeah.
And they all try to go to this open house because the Mets game is on in the home.
Oh, yes, that's what it is.
And there's
so
like,
good.
Oh, yes, H.G. Pennypacker here. And then they all end up going to the same place, like Pennypacker, Vandelay, Varnskin. Like, they realize they're all there. And that's even playing on itself. Like, this is a fiction within a fiction.
Right.
It's inception fiction.
Yeah, that, the Puerto Rican Day, you've only seen if you're a true fan, because it was aired live and then never shown again on in reruns, because part of it is Kramer upsets a bunch of Puerto Ricans because it's their like
parade, so all traffic is stopped.
Yeah, and somehow Kramer catches one of their flags on fire.
Yeah,
and then steps on it to put it out.
The flag accidentally catches on fire, and he tries to put it out like a good man should, and ends up. I mean, what the image is him stamping on a burning Puerto Rican flag, which, given the context, is not bad.
Right,
but if you got the show on mute, you're like, whoa, that is dark.
Well,
Seinfeld.
It can be easily offensive to. Anyone from
anyone,
Puerto Rico.
Anyone at all. Oh, my gosh.
So you'll never see it on TV, but if you buy the DVDs, that's how you see that one. And it is a classic. It's the second to the last episode.
It's also the second highest viewed episode live.
Really? Probably because it's...
Because it was the one before
so
the
taboo.
Finale.
Oh, viewed.
Yes.
Oh.
It was the one before the finale. Finale was the most viewed.
Right. You're talking about live. I'm thinking in syndication.
No,
okay.
No. There's no way they could find out how many times I watched it on my DVD player. I gotta go.
Oh, it's too good. Right away, top favorite episode.
I think it's Puerto Rican Flag Day.
Really?
I think it is.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's
not a bad choice.
No, it's not. And like I said, I just love seeing the three guys come together over the Mets game in traffic.
Genius.
I don't know. I saw it, and it was one of those things where I didn't know about it because it would never record on my DVR.
Right.
And I think you might have said, or one of our buddies said, hey, you got to watch this episode. It's not air because of this. All right, I watched it. It's instant classic for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's even more special because it's just
because it's
the
taboo.
Air. Yeah. What about you, man?
Easily. Well, okay, so my favorite episode coincides with my favorite character because my favorite character is George.
Oh.
I think... He is the key to the show, which is controversial. Everyone fights me on it. You know who you're talking to.
How are they? Ben. How are any one of those four not the key to the show?
Right. But okay, so here's my argument. Just go with me on this real quick. Kramer makes the show iconic.
Mm-hmm. Even though his name is not on the title.
True. So you have, but go with me. You have a cast of Jerry, Elaine, and George.
Yes.
You have a show that is a hit, but it doesn't catapult it into what makes it amazing.
Okay.
Because Kramer is that over the top. Everyone loves, you know, you cheer loud for him because he's just Kramer.
Yes.
But you take away George and you don't have a show at all.
And you know why?
Why?
Because of the spectrum. What did I just say earlier?
I don't know.
On one side of the spectrum, you have Cosmo Kramer.
Right.
The physical comedy. The positive, optimistic, goofy, lovable hunk of craziness.
Doofus.
Yeah. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, you have the darkness. You have George Costanza. And he's not a bad person, but he's a bad person.
He is. There's one part in the show where Jerry's trying to lie. He's trying to beat a lie detector. And he goes, what am I doing? I have access to one of the most duplicitous, malicious, most terrible minds of the 20th century. And then he goes and he visits George.
That's so perfect.
It's too good.
Honestly, I could probably talk about this show all day and the impact it's had on, especially, I mean, I think of my favorite shows in the 21st century, and that would be because I was alive then, but The Office, 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, Community, like so many of these shows have this cast of eclectic characters that are all over the place, but they balance each other out and they bring the show into this crazy harmony of zany plot lines.
Yeah.
And it's not that they wouldn't have done it without Seinfeld, but it's hard to imagine a world without it.
But at the same time, it's like they went to the school.
They did.
At Seinfeld.
Well, Seinfeld is television writing 101. Yeah. Nowadays, anyways.
Totally true. Oh, Seinfeld, you've been good to us. We think you're hilarious, and we're going to watch you probably for the rest of our lives.
Easily.
Now it's the time of the show for Ben's Wacky Facts.
Wacky. Wow.
What do you think about the new theme song?
That was magical.
A little bit of a thrill ride.
Maybe we get a little change up on that next week. little tweaks. Positive criticism.
Yeah.
It can only go better from there.
Okay.
Because worse would be
worse.
A kick in the face, maybe.
Okay. Okay. That's a good note. I'll change it up next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like that'd be like a fun thing.
Just less jarring, maybe?
I don't know. I mean...
I'll change it up.
Yeah.
You'll hear it next week. I'll change it up.
That's fair.
Okay.
Just hit me with the facts, man.
Here we go. Here are the facts. So here is fact number one. The cast of Seinfeld could have looked very, very different. There's a lot of interesting casting choices that almost happen. For instance, George was almost a lot of different actors. David Alan Greer, who my generation probably knows as Carl, the cop from Jumanji.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
His car gets eaten by the like vine, and he's like, no, come on, man! Which is interesting because he's African-American, right? Like,
yeah.
That might have put like a whole new spin on Seinfeld. If George, the character of George, was David Alan Greer, it's like, I don't know, just, I feel like a lot of these are just like,
that's super
looking into a different universe and being like, whoa. But anyway, George, the character of George was almost Paul Schaefer, the band leader from Letterman.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Isn't that nuts? He auditioned. Danny DeVito auditioned.
Oh, man.
And Steve Buscemi auditioned.
For George?
For George.
All of those could have been George.
Yes.
I would have killed to see a Danny DeVito George.
Isn't that nuts, though?
But also, a Steve Buscemi George.
Right. Keep going with me.
Oh,
Elaine
gosh.
Almost had many potential actresses. Patricia Heaton. It's Deb. Deborah! From Everybody Loves Raymond. Megan Mullally.
Oh, yes. She is Ron Swanson. Oh,
Tammy too.
Nick Offerman's actual wife.
Tammy One.
Yes.
Tammy too from Parks and Rec.
From Parks and Rec.
But also Will and Grace, she's Karen. And then Rosie O'Donnell. Here, get this.
No.
Larry David personally asked her to audition because they were friends and they were like played in the same comedy clubs.
What?
Isn't that nuts?
That's insane to me.
Totally different character, right?
Wow.
I'm so happy that it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And then Tony Shalhoub.
What?
Auditioned for the role of Kramer. Obviously, Michael Richards got the role of Kramer.
Right.
But in the same regard, Michael Richards auditioned for the role of Monk in Monk.
No.
Yes.
Isn't that nutso? No way.
That's a wacky fact.
Okay, all of those, that was like five.
I know.
That was like 100 wacky facts.
That was the whole list.
That's incredible.
Yeah, isn't that nuts?
That's psycho. We were just talking about the whole Will Ferrell, Steve Carell mix up in SNL last
week. Yeah.
And now to hear all those other celebrities, paths that could have crossed or could have been or should have been.
Like, think about this. You open on Jerry's apartment. Jerry's like, oh, what am I going to eat for breakfast? I can't do Jerry. Do it.
Coffee cake? Is it coffee or is it cake?
Superman!
Hold on, I gotta warm up a little bit. What's the deal with that?
Airplane peanuts! I can't do it.
It's okay.
It's fine. But so you open on Jerry, and then in pops Tony Shalhoub through the door. And it's like, hey, Kramer. And then out comes David Alan Greer as George from the bathroom. And then Rosie O'Donnell comes in and goes, hey, everyone, it's Elaine.
That's her catchphrase.
That's how totally different show.
It would have been a bad show if that was her catchphrase.
Here we go. Here's wacky fact number two.
Well, first of all, I'm going to give you a solid
C
grand
plus.
Slam
yes!
on that one. That was so good. I'm never going to forget that.
Here's wacky fact number two. Jerry turned down $110 million. That's $5 million an episode.
Because he wanted to do Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Like 10 years later.
Yeah. He was waiting.
He turned down that much money to do a season 10 of Seinfeld. Yeah. The NBC execs were like, why would you ever stop? Like, this is.
Well, they would have made triple that.
Right. Exactly. But I just think it's so cool. This is one of my favorite quotes from Jerry. He said, for me, it's all about timing. He's talking about when to end Seinfeld. My life is all about timing as a comedian. My sense of timing is everything. And like, so he's saying that about knowing when to stop.
And that's what no one else has these days. For crying out loud,
amen.
Every single show I watch, it's one season too long, two seasons too long,
right?
Way too over the top. I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like, I think of The Office, Steve Carell.
We're not going to mention any names. The Office.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to. The Office. Steve Carell bowed out when the show should have stopped.
Yeah.
I think that's what he was saying. Guys, we should stop. And they're like, no, we're going to make a lot of money. And he's like, that's not what it's about. Timing is everything. And left. And that's exactly what Jerry's talking about. But that's the funny thing. Jerry is an actual, very successful stand-up comedian.
Right.
And that takes timing. We almost said it at the exact same time. And he knows it better than anyone.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just so cool. The cast and crew totally said, you know, in interviews, like they would say, when is Seinfeld going to end? They would go, that's Jerry's decision. And when he makes it, we're going to respect it. And when he did, that's what they did.
Even though it's arguable to say the finale was a complete and utter failure. Was that a dog bark?
Yeah,
at the end?
It got caught in the fire.
Oh my gosh.
It was bad.
That's pretty wacky also.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. He's making way less on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with those Hulu ads. No way.
Well, I think it's all about syndication for him. He's pretty
syndicated, man.
Yeah. Like, he's pretty rich.
Yeah.
Like, easily could buy a car.
Or two.
Oh.
And definitely some coffee.
Nope.
Orange mocha frappuccinos.
That's next week's episode. JK. So here we go. Here's wacky fact number three. Throughout the series of Seinfeld, the chance to sit in one of the booths in the restaurant, Monk's restaurant, and then therefore be included in a scene was auctioned off for charity. Wow. So you see those people, those other people sitting in the restaurant, they bought their way into that seat to just be in an episode, mm-hmm. but all that money went to charity. How cool is that?
That's really cool, actually.
That's nuts. I wish I would have known. That's I was amazing. 5 at the time. I wish I would have known.
Okay, we kind of talked about this last time. That's a pretty good fact. I'm going to give you a solid 2 out of 3.
Hey. Oh.
Here's a side trig for you.
Oh, RJ's famous side
trigs. RJ's side trigs. .gov.
That's side intriguing.
Remember, I think it was just this year, they made a replica set of Jerry's apartment in L.A. or New York. Ugh.
For art?
For arts. Okay. And people could come look at it. It was an exact replica. First day, first dude there breaks it by doing the Kramer entrance through the door. In classic Kramer fashion, ruins everything for everyone.
That side trick just knocked it out of the park.
Thank you.
That saved that last
one. Oh my gosh. Oh,
that's so good. And that's it. That's what we got for the podcast.
Honestly, Ben, where can you find us?
Ladies and gentlemen, you can communicate with us. We want to hear from you. Go ahead and send an email to whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We will respond to those questions, those ideas, whatever you got. You send us an email, even if it just says, hey, we'll respond with a hey back. But we want to hear from you.
But if you say hey, I might say, new number, who dis?
Because we're always looking for those lols.
Also, I'm on Twitter at Rodolfo the Brown. Ben's Twitter is at JeffreyTamborImpersonator.gov. This is the best I could think of on the fly.
Please, somebody look that up and see if it's a one. I'll take it.
Oh, no. Yours is Paul Giamatti Impersonator. That's what it was. My bad.
What, do I look like him? Or do I just do a good Paul?
No, your face looks like Paul Giamatti.
Thanks.
Like a little bulldog.
He's not really Hollywood royalty.
No, he's a household name.
Well, sure, but so is Sinbad.
Oh, no, you know what that is?
What?
Oy,
boy. Oy, it's getting hot in here.
We are on iTunes now.
Yeah. Go ahead and go to your podcast app. Go open...
the search button.
The search button on the podcast.
Oh, gosh, dang it. Do you know how to work the podcast app? You hit podcast, you hit search, you type in, why am I laughing? ? You could ask Siri to do it. You could be like, Siri, help me find why am I laughing? And you're like, boom, boom, calling dad. You'd be like, dang it, Siri, no!
iOS 10, come on!
I know. So we're on iTunes. Check us out. You can subscribe.
Please subscribe. We want you guys to get this content. It's fun for us.
Yes. We will come back every week, release these on Wednesday for you. And you know what? Keep laughing. Keep having a good time.
And always remember, comedy's all about friendship.
Timing. All right, guys. Bye, everyone. Have a good one.